Man has not a single quality underived from deity. Think of that about man. If you think about it, what kind of an image, what kind of a model are you holding of man? He possesses no life, intelligence, nor creative power of his own, but reflects spiritually all that belongs to his maker. And it goes on, one after another after another. Throughout her writings, we find our leader's detailed spiritual description of what she refers to as the absolute ideal man. She gives us so many ideas of soul with which to replace the apparent objects of sense which we see everywhere. Now, early in my study of Christian Science, I just tried to find any kind of a paper written by somebody or something. I thought, boy, I'm going to get the secret way, the quick way in or something. I've come to see that if we'll just turn to our textbook and to the Bible, there is so much there you don't have time for anything else. If you'll just stop and think about it, read it like that woman did for 20 minutes and was healed. I remember a particular application of one of her statements found on page 463 of the textbook. A spiritual idea has not a single element of error, comma, and. This truth removes properly whatever's offensive. I'll take a minute and tell you of an experience about that. It's such a powerful statement. Early in my practice, I had a man come to me with a problem. He had been repairing a camera, and his eyes were down close to the shutter mechanism when a powerful spring slipped and threw a tiny brass screw into his eye, and it got behind the eyeball. And he hadn't slept in about 10 days. His eyes were all swollen shut. His head was twice the size of normal. And I said, what have you been working with? And he said, well, I've been trying to know that the divine mind will remove properly whatever is offensive. Well, I can understand that. If you had something in your eye and it was hurting like that, that's what would be in your thought of getting rid of that. But I pointed out to him, her statement was much fuller than that. Her statement was, a spiritual idea has not a single element of error. Comma, and this truth. Now, what truth was it referring to? That first part of the sentence. A spiritual idea has not a single element of error. And it's this truth that removes properly whatever's offensive from thought. You see, he was trying to get rid of a material object from a physical body. And that isn't what this talks about at all. Now, I know it appears that way. And if they'd taken x-rays, it probably would have shown a brass screw there. But you're simply looking at an illusion, whether you're looking at it through an x-ray plate or you're looking at it with naked eyesight. Well, he got the glimpse of that. I remember him saying, oh, I see. And he went over that. And all of a sudden, he was no longer dealing with trying to get rid of a brass screw. He got a glimpse. He said it was instantaneous. There was no more brass screw. He never did find it. By the next morning, his eyes were normal and his head was normal and he was back at the office. Now, if we had been trying to get rid of a brass screw out of a physical eye by metaphysics, we'd be working yet. It was a lie. And that truth, that simple truth, that a spiritual idea has not a single element of error. That's all that did it. See how powerful these statements can be if we just apply them? Our job then, when mentally confronted with material models, is to be willing to make the exchange and deliberately replace them with specific spiritual facts, ideals. What if we stopped and thought about them? Really thought about them and accepted them as fact. What do you think it would do to our ideals of man, to the models we fashion our thought after, and consequently to our lives? When we mistakenly identify ourselves as material and set about by one means or another to heal or create a physical body, what are we doing? Well, it's as though you were going on a train trip. When you arrive at the station, one of your friends is there, and he goes out onto the track, and he looks down the track, and he says, comes back in genuine alarm, and he says, "You can't get on those tracks. Those tracks go together right outside of town." And 20 pairs of eyes look down those tracks, and then, sure enough, they go together, they merge. Now, only a fool would get on a pair of tracks where the train's going to tip over pretty soon. But you, relying upon what you know, not what you see, because your eyes are seeing those tracks go together also, but relying upon what you know through education and experience, you get on that train and go hurtling off at 80 miles an hour unafraid. Now, when he said that, you had three choices to make. One, you could pick up your suitcase and go home. Two, you could get on the train relying upon what you know, not what you see. Or you had a third choice. You could all go down on the track and hold a prayer meeting and try and heal those tracks. Now, we can laugh at that. But isn't that what we do so often? Try to heal tracks. An illusion? Try to heal an illusion? The God we speak of is invisible. John said, "No man has seen God at any time." Jesus confirmed this in declaring, "Ye have neither heard his voice at any time or seen his shape." And Paul speaks of the image of the invisible God. So if God is invisible, and he is, then his image and likeness must be invisible. Thinking of God as invisible may make us feel something like the little girl whose father was putting her to bed. When they went into the dark bedroom, he felt her little arms tighten around his neck. "I'm afraid, Daddy." And he said, "God's right here with you, honey." "I know, Daddy, but I want somebody with skin around them." Aren't we often like this? thinking we want something with skin around them. Actually, thinking of man as invisible puts us in a whole different ballgame, doesn't it? See what it does to disease?